पितामह समासं ये प्रसादे गिरिशोपमा आश्रय सर्वभूतानां यथा देवो रमाश्रया।
This child will be like his grandfather, Yudhisthira or Brahma, in equanimity of mind. He will be munificent like the Lord of the Kailash Hill, Shiva, and he will be the resort of everyone, like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. He who is even the shelter of the goddess of fortune. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Mental equanimity refers both to Maharaj Yudhisthira and to Brahma, the grandfather of all living beings. According to Sridhar Swami, the grandfather referred to is Brahma, but according to Vishwanath Chakrabarti, the grandfather is Maharaj Yudhisthira himself. But in both cases, the comparison is equally good because both of them are recognized representatives of the Supreme Lord, and thus, both of them have to maintain mental equanimity, being engaged in welfare work for the living being. Any responsible executive agent at the top of administration has to tolerate different types of onslaughts from the very persons for whom he works. Brahmaji was criticized even by the gopis, the highest perfectional devotees of the Lord. The gopis were dissatisfied with the work of Brahmaji because Lord Brahma, as creator of this particular universe, created eyelids which obstructed their seeing Lord Krishna. They could not tolerate a moment's blinking of the eyes, for it kept them from seeing their beloved Lord Krishna. So what to speak of others who are naturally very critical of every action of a responsible man? Similarly, Maharaj Yudhisthira had to cross over many difficult situations created by his enemies, and he proved to be the most perfect maintainer of mental equanimity in all critical circumstances. Therefore, the example of both grandfathers for maintaining equanimity of mind is quite fitting. Lord Shiva is a celebrated demigod who awards gifts to beggars. His name is therefore Ashutosh, or one who is very pleased easily. He is also called Bhutanath, or the Lord of the common folk, who are mainly attached to him because of his munificent gifts, even without consideration of the after effects. Ravana was very attached to Lord Shiva, and by easily pleasing him, Ravana became so powerful that he wanted to challenge the authority of Lord Ram. Of course, Ravan was never helped by Lord Shiva when he fought with Rama, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Lord of Lord Shiva. To Brikasura, Lord Shiva awarded a benediction which was not only awkward, but also disturbing. Brikasura became empowered by the grace of Lord Shiva to vanish anyone's head simply by touching it.
Although this was awarded by Lord Shiva, the cunning fellow wanted to make an experiment of the power by touching the head of Lord Shiva. Thus, the Lord had to take shelter of Vishnu to save himself from trouble. And the Lord Vishnu, by his illusory potency, asked Vrikasura to make an experiment with his own head. The fellow did it and was finished himself. And so the world was saved from all sorts of trouble by such a cunning beggar of the demigods. The excellent point is that Lord Shiva never denies anyone any sort of gift. He is therefore the most generous, although sometimes some kind of mistake is made. Rama means the goddess of fortune, and her shelter is Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu is the maintainer of all living beings. There are innumerable living beings, not only on the surface of this planet, but also in all other hundreds and thousands of planets. All of them are provided with all necessities of life for the progressive march towards the end of self-realization. But on the path of sense gratification, they are put into difficulty by the agency of Maya, the illusory energy. And so travel the path of a false plan of economic development. Such economic development is never successful because it is illusory. These men are always after the mercy of the illusory goddess of fortune. But they do not know that the goddess of fortune can live only under the protection of Vishnu. Without Vishnu, the goddess of fortune is an illusion. We should therefore seek the protection of Vishnu instead of directly seeking the protection of the goddess of fortune. Only Vishnu and the devotees of Vishnu can give protection to all. And because Maharaj Parikshit was himself protected by Vishnu, it was quite possible for him to give complete protection to all who wanted to live under his rule. Continuing their calculations of the future of the newborn child, Parikshit. In this particular verse, it is very wonderful. It is described that this child will have the power to give protection to all, just as Lord Vishnu himself gives shelter to the goddess of fortune and to all living beings. Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, provides all of the beautiful, opulent things of this world. And therefore, people very much desire the shelter of the goddess of fortune. People worship the demigods because they want material facilities. We should know that the demigods are expansions of Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, within the material sphere. The difference between Durga and Lakshmi is simply that Durga never ever, Lakshmi Devi never leaves the lotus feet of Lord Narayan. She is always seeking shelter of his lotus feet, and she is always giving shelter to all who approach her properly with the lotus feet of Vishnu. But those who want to enjoy separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to them she appears as Durga, equipped with her many weapons to punish the illusion souls and ultimately bring them back to their senses that without Krishna there is only misery. There is only an illusory misconception of happiness. But Lakshmi herself, she is taking shelter of the Supreme Lord because he is the proprietor of everything that exists. So those persons who worship the various demigods for material sense enjoyment, they are indirectly taking shelter of Lakshmi Devi. But they get no real shelter at all. But those who understand Lakshmi's eternal relationship with Lord Narayan, they worship the divine couple in a mood of humble service, not begging for any material benedictions, but begging for the opportunity to have the realization of our eternal divine loving relationship with the Lord. It is explained here by Srila Prabhupada that one who takes shelter of Vishnu can give shelter of Vishnu. Maharaj Parikshit had proven himself qualified to give shelter to all living beings because he himself had already utterly taken shelter of the Lord. No one can give real shelter to anyone. If a mother thinks she could give shelter to her child, this is an illusory form of false ego. If a father thinks that he could give shelter to his family, this is also a great illusion. If a king, a soldier, an employer, anyone thinks that they can give shelter, prakrite kriyamana nigunai karamani saravasha ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate, it means they have been defeated by the most vicious enemy of envy in the form of the false ego. Because factually, Krishna is the shelter of everyone at all times. No one else can give us shelter, even for a moment, real shelter. These days, people, because they do not understand, even devotees sometimes, in mental anxiety, they run to materialistic counselors, psychologists, psychiatrists. They attend various organizations for various types of material or emotional support. But there is no shelter. Bhagavatam explains, such persons while they are sinking and drowning in the ocean of material existence, they are seeking shelter of a boat made out of solid stone. A stone boat looks like a boat. But if you take shelter of such a boat, very quickly you sink to the bottom of the ocean of material existence. But Maharaj Parikshit, when he was in the womb of his mother, and Ashwatthama had thrown the most deadly Brahmastra which was brilliant like many, many suns, and powerful like many nuclear weapons. This helpless child within womb, who could not even move to even make an attempt to get away. He helplessly took shelter of Lord Vishnu. With his heart, with his soul, with his mind, with his senses, he utterly took shelter of Vishnu. And anyone who takes shelter of the Lord in a helpless state of mind, the Lord guarantees that he will protect. He will personally appear by his inconceivable arrangement to protect such a devotee. But the qualification to receive that shelter is you must be convinced that there is no other shelter. Krishna reveals himself as you approach him. If you still have any hope, any consideration that there is any shelter outside of Krishna, Krishna will not reveal himself to you in full. As long as you think by your intelligence, by your powers, or by the intelligence or power of any of the fallible soldiers of this material existence can save you, can protect you, then you will not get Krishna. We must have this faith, this conviction, this detachment. Shri Krishna Sharana Mam, only Krishna is my shelter, and there is no second. And this is the way we should be chanting his holy name. And if we are not experiencing the ecstatic bliss, if we are not experiencing the fearless condition that the acharyas speak of when we are chanting his name, it is because we have not yet come to the point of utterly taking shelter of Krishna's name with no consideration of any other protection in all of creation. Our minds are still mixed. We chant our rounds, we come to kirtan, we chant, but still we're thinking, the doctor will give me shelter. My family members will give me shelter. The politicians through their social services will give me shelter. My own abilities to manipulate material existence will give me shelter in the form of occupation or so on. Therefore, we are not actually approaching the holy name with the proper state of mind. Krishna is our only shelter. And therefore, sometimes tathena kampam sushimikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vibhagam. Sometimes by Krishna's special mercy, he puts his devotee in a situation where that devotee can realize that Krishna is my only shelter. And sometimes those situations are not what we pray for. We should pray to be put in whatever situation is necessary to attain this realization. And there are so many examples. When Draupadi was being stripped of her clothes, she didn't pray to be stripped of her clothes. It was the least thing in the world that she could have possibly wanted. But it was in that state that she realized that she was helpless with no shelter but Krishna. Similarly, the Avanti Brahman, the last thing in the world that he wanted was to lose his reputation, to lose all of his wealth, to be laying in a completely poverty-stricken situation on the hard, cold ground with people passing urine on his face, on his head, in his food, spitting on him, throwing rocks upon him, and insulting him with the harshest, cruelest words. But in that state, there was no one to turn to, nothing to turn to, except Krishna. And he found shelter in Krishna at that moment of enlightenment, of pure realization of the Absolute Truth. Krishna is our only shelter. And Maharaj Parikshit, as a helpless baby, because he took shelter of Krishna, he received Krishna. Krishna personally appeared right before him with his beautiful, beautiful form, his eternal form. And he destroyed the Brahmastra. And the Brahmins are here explaining, and Srila Prabhupada further elaborates, that because Parikshit Maharaj completely took shelter of Krishna, therefore he has the capacity to give shelter to all living beings. He has the capacity not to give his shelter, but to give Vishnu shelter to all. And this is our prayer to the spiritual master. This is his qualification. The spiritual master is not God. The spiritual master is able to give shelter of God to us because he has completely taken shelter himself. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namane. We offer our respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, because he has completely taken shelter of Krishna. Therefore, he could give us the shelter of Krishna. One who has not taken shelter of Krishna can give no shelter of Krishna. And we call such great souls Jagat Guru. What does that mean? Because the divine grace of Krishna is so freely flowing through them, such a great personality. Therefore, he has the power, Krishna has the power, to deliver the whole universe. Transparent via medium means one who has no ego blocking the free flow of Krishna's mercy. Through his heart, through his every word, through his every action, he is giving Krishna's mercy. Through Krishna Seva, through Krishna's name. And he is teaching us systematically how to take shelter of Krishna. It is also explained that in equanimity of mind, Parikshit Maharaj will be like Yudhisthira or Brahma. Srila Prabhupada explains in this beautiful purport how Sridhar Swami and Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explain that grandfather refers to both Brahma as well as Yudhisthira because they both exhibited this divine quality of a Mahabhagavat Paramhamsa Vaishnava. Anyone who accepts a position of great responsibility undoubtedly has to accept so many onslaughts from the very people that they are responsibly giving their lives to protect and to help. This is the nature of material consciousness. We find Lord Brahma. He creates, he makes all facilities. And how many difficulties he had to tolerate. His own sons came to exploit him and destroy him. Brahma is the grandfather of all of us. He has created this universe. He has given us every type of wonderful, wonderful facility to perfect our lives. He has personally, as the Acharya of the Brahma Sampradaya, giving us perfect and complete instructions of how to utilize the creation that he has given for the highest purpose of being the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. But his own grandchildren, in mass population, utterly disobey and disregard his intent and exploit the resources he is so kindly giving to us. But yet, Brahma tolerates it and continues at every moment to try to facilitate all living beings with the opportunity for the perfection in life. It is in regard to Maharaj Yudhisthira, so much he tolerated. What is Duryodhana? Maharaj Yudhisthira was always so kind and respectful and loving toward him. But in return, Duryodhana simply wanted to cheat him, to exploit him, if possible, even to kill him. When Duryodhana convinced Dhritarashtra, Shakuni, and others that this rascal Yudhisthira must be killed, they offered him that beautiful house in Varnataka as a vacation, holiday resort. It was built out of the flammable material of lakh, as all of the five Pandavas and their own virtuous and chaste mother was in that house while they were sleeping. Duryodhana arranged for the house to be burned to ashes. But by the arrangement of the Lord, with the help of Vidura, it is explained that five others were in the house. The Pandavas escaped. And when they found the burnt remnants of four male or five males and a female, they assumed that the Pandavas and Kunti have been burned to death. You know what a terrible, painful death that is? To be burned alive? It's terrible. And Duryodhana, although externally he was very sad, he wanted to appear to be a very good man. But in his heart, he was so happy. He was thinking, they are dead. Now my desire is fulfilled. Now no one can come in the way of my sense gratification. This was the mentality. In so many ways, he tried to murder the Pandavas. He tried to give them deadly poison in the name of prasad. In fact, Bhima was poisoned. He fell unconscious. He was thrown in the river.
And Duryodhana was very happy. Ha, he's dead. But as he was thrown in the river, snakes began to bite him. But the poison of the snakes neutralized the poison of the food, and he came back to life. And he was even more powerful than ever. Duryodhana was very, very upset. How is this? Because they were devotees. Krishna always protected the Pandavas, somehow or other. And when the Pandavas were cheated, Duryodhana arranged that dice tournament, and he fixed the dice where Shakuni, he had the mystic power that whatever numbers he wanted to be on the dice would come. So it was not a fair match. So they were cheated. And as they were cheated, they lost everything and they were exiled to the forest. They had nothing, but Duryodhana was not satisfied. He wanted to see them suffer total humiliation. You see, Krishna says in Gita that lust is like fire. It burns and it burns and it is never satiated. The more you feed it, the more it wants to consume. It is not only lust, but it is also the ego. It is like fire. If you are envious of someone, there's no end to how much you want to destroy them. He already cheated the Pandavas to such an extent that they lost the kingdom that was theirs. They lost all of their wealth, all of their reputation. They lost everything. But Duryodhana's envy was still burning like fire. He still was not satisfied. Just see. He had the kingdom, the palace, all of the armies, all of the worship. But he was miserable because in his heart of hearts, the flame was still burning. The flame of fear that the Pandavas may come back someday. This is material life. Whatever you get, whatever you have, you will be miserable because that will never be enough. You will constantly be fearing that something will take it away or someone. That is the nature. Rich people are not satisfied. The more you have, the more your attachments and your ambitions to protect, maintain, and expand burns like fire. Whoever you are, it is the law of nature. There is no exemption. The only satisfaction is Krishna. Seeking shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. Duryodhana had every opportunity, but he rejected it. So he made grand arrangements just to add insult to injury upon the Pandavas. They're living in the forest. They have nothing. Let us have a beautiful procession with all of our royal wardrobes and flags, chariots. And let us go to where the Pandavas are just to look at them and just sneer. See who we are and see who you are. So he made big, big arrangements for no other purpose than to torture the Pandavas emotionally, mentally. But on the way, one Gandharva understood this is a rascal. So he fought with Duryodhana, he fought with Karna, and all the others. He drove them all away. They all ran for their lives. And Duryodhana was captured and tied up helplessly. Meanwhile, Arjuna, they came. Some of the Kurus came where Yudhisthira was sitting with his brothers. They said, "This Gandharva has attacked, and Duryodhana has been defeated and taken prisoner. Please help. After all, he is your cousin." Bhima, he was very happy. Very good. Let him accept his karma. Very good. And Arjuna, he was also quite satisfied. But Yudhisthira, he was thinking, no. He told Arjuna and Bhima, "You must go and fight and protect him." "What? Protect him? He's tried to murder us, he's tried to kill us, he's blasphemed us, he's cheated us, he tried to strip our wife naked, Draupadi." Yudhisthira said, "Amongst ourselves we may fight. There are 100 Kurus and 5 Pandavas. But when an outside force comes to attack, we are 105. We are one unit. We must protect each other." So Arjuna went, and they brought Duryodhana back and threw him at the feet of Yudhisthira. And Yudhisthira, he released him. He said, "Go back to your kingdom, enjoy." He was not disturbed. Such equanimity. Only a devotee could have such compassion, such absolute control over the mind, the senses, envy, anger, and all of the passions of this world. Yudhisthira exhibited this quality throughout his life. And he was the grandfather, the uncle-grandfather of Parikshit Maharaj. And here it is explained that Parikshit Maharaj, Mahajano Yena Gatasa Pantha, he will have the same kind of nature of self-control and equanimity as Yudhisthira. And he will be munificent like Lord Shankar. Munificence means being willing to give, being willing to protect in a charitable way. And there is no one greater than Lord Shiva in this regard. Srila Prabhupada explains his name is Ashutosh, because he is very easily pleased, and when he is pleased, he could give you anything you desire. And therefore, so many demons throughout history, knowing Shiva in this way, they become his devotees, not out of love, but out of greed. They will perform the worship, they will do the puja and the sacrifice, so that they could get whatever they want and use it for their own nefarious purposes. And the example is given of Ravana. He worshipped Shiva with such attention. And because of this, Shiva gave him such incredible, immense power. But he utilized that power to try to destroy the very Lord and worshipable object of Shiva, Lord Ram. And it is described here that he got the power from Shiva, he fought against Ram, but when he was fighting Ram, Shiva was nowhere around to protect him. And the story of Brikasura. If you want to know the story, come tomorrow night to Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan Auditorium, where the drama of Lord Shiva giving benedictions to Brikasura will be enacted by Sri Sri Radha Gopinath's
devotees.
So Lord Shiva is so charitable. He is known as Bhutanath, which means he's always ready to give benedictions to everybody, even the most sinful. But the greatest benediction that Shiva wants to give everybody, Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambhu. If you worship Shiva as a demigod, all you will get is material benedictions. If you worship him as the supreme god, then you will get usually the same thing, material benedictions. Maybe some mystic power, siddhis, which are also material benedictions. Maybe liberation. But if you understand the most exalted identity that Lord Shiva is eternally pleased to accept as the greatest, the supremest of all Vaishnavas. If you worship him in this mood, then he could give you the very treasure of his own life, pure unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Bhagavan Shri Krishna. Ultimately, Lord Shiva is an expansion directly of Krishna. But the expansion understood properly through Shastra is he is an expansion that is eternally giving loving devotional service to Krishna in his own mood. Therefore, there is the Rudra Sampradaya. He is the founder acharya of an entire sampradaya. And Vishnu Swami, even the great Saint Balabhacharya, they all came in this Rudra Sampradaya. They are delivering to the world the very most secret essence of Lord Shiva's heart, Krishna Bhakti. In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, Lord Shiva appeared as Advaita Acharya. And he was giving freely, without discrimination, Krishna Bhakti to anyone who would simply accept it through the chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. And to give bhakti is the greatest act of charity. And this Krishna consciousness movement is exclusively based on this principle of giving the charity of bhakti. Although the charity of materialistic humanitarianism and philanthropy is certainly in the sattva guna and helpful to the temporary material condition that we have in this world, it does not solve any problem. The Gita explains, janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha dosha anudarshanam. The real problem is not disease. Just to solve it by getting well for some time. The real problem is the real solution is to become free from birth, old age, disease, and death. To transcend the bodily concept of life. To experience and realize the eternal, blissful nature of the soul. That is the only solution to the problems of this world. Materialistic philanthropy, humanitarian activities. And there are so many organizations
who are working so hard to give some temporary relief of suffering. But Krishna does not appear in this world for this purpose. Krishna appears in this world to give us the ultimate solution, to teach us how to go back home, back to Godhead. Abrama bhuvana loka punaravartano arjana mam ubheta tu kaunteya punara janma na vidyate. Krishna explains in Gita that this material world is a place of misery. Mamupetya punara janma dukalayam ashashvatam. We must understand with conviction that whatever situation we're in this world, it is a place of misery. Whether you are rich or poor, educated or uneducated, successful or failure, healthy or diseased, this is a place of misery. You cannot change that reality. It is a truth, an infallible truth. But Krishna says, one who attains my abode, he can become happy. And Krishna's abode is within our own hearts. We could realize it today and find real bliss. And the only approach to the abode of the Lord, bhaktyamam abhi janati, bhaktyatvananyaya shakya aham evam vidurajuna. It is only through bhakti that you can approach my abode within your heart. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his divine representatives, they are giving to the world the supreme charity. Bharata bhumi te hoila manusya janma jara janma sarata kakara parakara ubakar. The greatest welfare work is to give Krishna bhakti. This is real charity. And therefore, devotees, they go out and beg. Usually beggars do not give in charity. Usually beggars expect others to give them in charity. Usually the wealthy, puffed up people, they think, I have some charity to give to the beggars. The sadhus, they come to my office for money. I will provide. I am charitable. What to speak of the poor? This is the nature. But the Vaishnavas are so great, they become beggars with no ego at all. This was Srila Prabhupada's glory. Srila Prabhupada, when he was praying to Krishna, he identified himself as an insignificant beggar. He was a beggar from Krishna. He was begging Krishna, please give me shelter of your lotus feet. Please give me the power to deliver your message to the world. And when he came to the West, and when he came back to India, he also appeared as a beggar to humanity. But he was not begging to take charity. He was begging to give charity. He was begging the egoistic, illusioned masses of human society, begging them, please, take Krishna's name. Please take this bhakti process and go back home, back to Godhead. This is the charity I've come to give you, and I'm taking the form of a humble beggar, pleading with you, take Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu themselves took the form of beggars. When Mahaprabhu was a sannyasi, he was begging, please accept Krishna's name, accept Krishna's worship. And this was the instruction he gave to Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur. You go door to door, everyone you meet, shop to shop, and you beg them this charity.
We have only one alms we want from you. Chant Krishna's name. Worship Krishna. Remember Krishna. Krishna is your life and soul. Accept us. That is charity. And that is the principle that the Hare Krishna movement is based on. To give the charity of bhakti and Krishna Nam and Krishna's prasad, his mercy. To deliver people from all the miseries of this material existence and situate them in the loving, ecstatic service of the Lord. So all of these most munificent and wonderful qualities are here being described within the character of Maharaj Parikshit. And it's so wonderful that all the qualities that they are explaining, they are giving reference to previous great souls and their character. Mahajano yena katha sabhanta. And therefore it is so very important not only to understand Krishna, but to understand the lives of the great souls who have surrendered as devotees to Krishna. Because through them, we can emulate and understand what we should strive for in our life and what is it that actually pleases Krishna. Krishna is the source of all opulences, of all virtues. He is perfect and complete in everything. And when he comes to this world as the son of Nanda Maharaj, he reveals the most unrestrained mercy of the Absolute Truth. And as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he even exceeds the mercy he revealed in his form of Krishna. But we know Krishna is God. We cannot emulate his qualities. It's very difficult. But his devotees, the nature of their humble service reveals the greatest virtues that we should be willing to sacrifice our lives to emulate and to live by. Therefore, within our Vaishnav line, there are so many days of the appearance days and disappearance days of great acharyas. And by remembering them, by hearing about them, their lives, their teachings, we can actually have something to strive for. Every child has his hero that he wants to be like. But in today's society, the heroes are just degraded souls. Children, they make their heroes movie actors or movie actresses or professional singers or athletes. In India, cricket champions. In America, football, baseball, boxing, basketball. Their hero is someone who's the best at throwing a ball through a little circle, 8 feet above the ground or whatever it is. That is their idea of hero. The person who can jump in the most incredibly wonderful ways just to put a ball through a little circle in the air. Yes, we have seen. And a majority of the youth of America has this person's picture on their t-shirts, has his name on their automobiles, on their shoes, on their hats. Why? Because he is so wonderful at throwing the ball through the hoop. That's his only qualification. And he's practiced his whole life just to put the ball through the hoop.
So he is the hero. Such a hero. He makes, I think, just by playing basketball, he makes, I think, something like $6 million a year. But because he's so popular, everyone wants to use his name and his picture, his form, to sell their products, because they know if he's connected, if he says, "I wear these shoes," the whole nation will buy those shoes. And it's true. If he uses this shaving cream, the whole nation will buy our shaving cream. So he's on television. "I use this shaving cream." "Oh, if I use shaving cream like this, maybe I can throw the ball through the hoop also." This is the mentality. Even children who don't even have a beard, little children, they start using the shaving cream. Not for shaving, just because they think, if I do like this, maybe I will make the ball go in the hoop. This is society today. He makes something like $25 million a year just in advertisements. The most popular person in America. One of the wealthiest people in America. Very physically fit, very healthy. But a couple years ago, his father was killed. So he was totally miserable. To this day, he's a suffering, miserable person. What to do? That is the laws of nature. You can be on the top, but still, beyond your control, something will happen to make you miserable. And all your wealth and all of your expertise and all of your fame and all of your prestige will not give you any comfort. Cruel nature. But still, these are the heroes that people idolize in today's society. But the Vaishnavas, they read about the great acharyas. They do not throw balls through hoops. They do not... Some are famous like anything because they could run across the line. Or they could take a wooden stick and hit a piece of pig, a little ball made out of a pig's dead corpse, and hit it farther than other people. This is... When Prabhupada saw people playing golf, he thought, "What is this? So many millions of people putting so much of their time and energy just to try to put a ball in a hole in the ground. That is their goal. They're constantly meditating on this hole in the ground, trying to get that ball somehow in the hole in the ground, by hook, by crook, but we have to do it." And they have a whole bag of all sorts of different shaped clubs to get the ball in the hole of the ground. And they practice and practice. Even 80-year-old men, they will go out in 110-degree weather all day long just to get the ball in the hole in the ground, risking their lives. Recently, in Chicago, there was so much heat. 550 people died because of the heat in one weekend. And some of the people died were old men on the golf course. They sacrificed their lives trying to get the ball in the hole in the ground. And this is how they're utilizing this valuable, rare human birth. We will not even try to speculate what their next birth will be if they are meditating on the hole in the ground. Anyways, people who are best at these, they are the biggest heroes on the planet. These are the people, these are the types of people that are idolized and glorified and worshipped by the masses. But those who have controlled their senses, those who are giving, risking their lives to give the charity of Krishna Prema, we want to hear their pastimes. When we read about Thakur Haridas or Srila Rup Sanatan Raghunath Das Goswamis, when we read about Thakur Narottam, Srinivas, Vishwanath, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, when we hear the glories of these personalities, Bhakti Siddhanta, Bhakti Vedanta Swami, we understand these are great souls. If we try to emulate their qualities, our lives will be perfect. No more birth, no more death. So therefore, this movement is to follow in the footsteps of these great souls and to make their life and glories known to the world. Thank you very much. Is there any questions?
While explaining the qualities of Yudhishthir, you mentioned the pastime of how he forgave Duryodhan after he was released from the Gandharvas. Now, Bhima, Arjuna and Yudhishthir are all liberated souls, associates of the Lord, and they are all Mahabhagavats. Yudhishthir's example is explained as one of forgiveness. So, how can we understand, or how come we don't see those qualities in Bhima, or is that that is another aspect of a devotee in trying to say that he should be punished?
Yes, another aspect of a devotee. Krishna reveals different virtues through different devotees at different times. As Kshatriyas, Bhima was correct. As a Kshatriya, justice should be served. Yudhisthira particularly exhibited this quality that the Brahmins are saying that Parikshit will also have, the quality of equanimity and magnanimity. And he exhibited it on so many occasions. When Kali himself was causing havoc in the world, he was ready to give it justice. He drew his sword and was on the verge of destroying Kali. But when Kali humbled himself and surrendered, Yudhisthira not only spared his life, but also awarded him places of residence within his community where he could rule. And similarly, when Parikshit was cursed by the inexperienced son of a Brahmin, Sringi, he could have counter-cursed. He could have punished Sringi. He could have arrested him and have had him beheaded. He could have counter-cursed. He could have neutralized. He could have done so many things. But Parikshit, like Yudhisthira Maharaj, had such a self-controlled mind that he accepted it as Krishna's mercy and offered his obeisances of respect to Sringi and his father. So yes, different devotees exhibit different qualities, and sometimes they appear to contradict each other. But that is Krishna's arrangement to show the wonderful variegatedness of the unalloyed devotion of his servitors. Yes, Srinathji Prabhu.
Maharaj, I heard that you said that Advaita Acharya is none other than Lord Shiva. Is that correct? Did I hear
yes.
it right? So sometimes in this Chaitanya Leela, we get sometimes dual identities, like Mahavishnu also is sometimes mentioned as Advaita Acharya when he is offering the tulsi leaves at and the Ganges water to invoke upon the Lord to come. Mm. So how do we adjust this?
You cannot adjust it, but you can understand it. We can adjust in our minds, as you are explaining.
Yes, that we must accept through the Shastra and through the Acharyas the tattva or the truths about these great personalities. That is the only way to understand, to humbly accept. So it is explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagava, Chaitanya Mangal, all the great histories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, that Advaita Acharya is Karana Dakshai Vishnu, Mahavishnu. He is also Lord Shiva. Not difficult, because Vishnu and Shiva are ultimately the same personality. Within this creation, Mahavishnu is the source of everything that exists. He is an expansion of Narayan. And Lord Shiva has many wonderful and complex functions within this universe. As a guna avatar, he is the destroyer of the universe. But that guna avatar Shiva is actually an aspect of Mahavishnu, who is the ultimate source and cause of this entire universe. Is it not? So in that way, there is no conflict. He's just, at different times, Advaita Acharya exhibits these various qualities of his own various attributes. Also, Lord Shiva is sometimes called the Lord of material creation. Brahma Samhita explains this very systematically, because this whole material energy begins by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, casting his glance. And within that glance, his own energy enters into material. There is no creation yet. And that is Shiva. Shiva actually, it is through the glance of Vishnu that Shiva enters into the material Shiva and Shakti. And through that combination of Shiva and Shakti, Shakti is Prakriti. Shiva is manifested in this way through the glance of Vishnu. So Shiva enters into the Shakti or the Prakriti, and through that all the material elements are created. The false ego, the mind, the intelligence, the mind, earth, water, fire, air, ether. So Shiva is actually the source of everything within this material existence also, through Mahavishnu. So in this way we can understand the intimate connection of one personality appearing in different forms and different ways through his diversified energies. And this is Advaita Acharya. Yes?
So when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to go to South India, when he went, and he used to go to the Shiva temples very often and dance there. So I presume he was remembering Advaita Acharya, and this way he was associating.
What Lord Chaitanya remembers is beyond my comprehension. But what we can understand by his teachings is he was appearing in the form of a devotee. And Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu, he understood that Lord Shiva is a manifestation of the Supreme Godhead in the mood of an eternal devotee of Godhead. And therefore he was respecting and honoring Lord Shiva in this mood of Param Vaishnav, praying for his blessings. This is how he has taught us exactly what he's feeling, exactly what Srimati Radha Rani feels. All I can say is, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. But we know what she tells us in her, when she speaks through the lips of Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Yes? Ananda Vrindavan Prabhu's questions to me during this visit to India.
Maharaj, whatever classes we hear from this...
One thing about Ananda Vrindavan is he illustrates very wonderfully how you can say the same things in so many ways. Just like the same person could put on so many dresses and costumes. Huh? One day she's in a red sari, one day a blue sari, one day yellow sari, one day green sari. Brahmacharis are always in saffron dhotis. That's why it's so easy to deal with brahmachari. But another day, this costume, that costume, so many costumes, but it's the same person. Similarly, so many long, detailed, complex presentations in the form of question, but it's always the same question. Haribo, yes.
So talking from last 2-3 classes which we are listening from you, Maharaj, you are giving so much emphasis on the things, if a devotee really, if any person who wants to become a devotee, there are many things he doesn't like it, yet he has to do it just as a show of surrender to Krishna. Second thing is, you also say many of times in the last 2-3 classes, is that this world is a battlefield, material world is a battlefield, and you have to just fight it out up to your last breath. And the last clue classes, you are saying that about, although you might be fighting this battlefield for the up to last time, last breath of your life, still the false ego of yours is not yet, that thing is still beating you. So when we see all these things, we feel it that we have become a devotee, yet although we have become a devotee, our battlefield has not yet started at all. Yeah, we might be facing a small problems, and yet we feel so much disturbed, oh, what will happen it? And we also don't know that what we'll be able to maintain this spiritual life or not. Next day also, even small battlefield is there and we are disturbed. And that too also, when we come to know that still the false ego is still waiting for us, and that we have not even conquered also. So is it so that such a long process, such a long time, such a long battlefield, and that too also, the false ego has not even been sorted out, is it possible for us to go back to Godhead?
Definitely. Without doubt, Krishna promises. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyashim namaskuru nam evaishasi satyam te pratijani priyoshime. Krishna promises, without fail, you will come back to Godhead. Just endeavor in this path of bhakti. Always remembering Krishna, becoming his devotee, worshipping and offering your respects to him. You will come to me without fail. Krishna's promise.
There is no doubt. On this battlefield, you should know that maya dyakshena prakriti suyate sacharachara, that Krishna is directing and controlling this material energy. And all the forces that come before you on this battlefield, it is only with Krishna's sanction. When you become his devotee, he is actually behind the scenes orchestrating whatever comes before you. And Krishna only does what's best. He will never put you in a situation that you cannot be victorious if you are not sincere and humble to take shelter of him. Maya cannot defeat you if you just remain sincere, humble devotee. Krishna will protect you under all circumstances. And the various adversaries that come in our life, difficulties, opposition, they are ultimately meant to help us to deepen our devotional service. Therefore, if we are sincere, we will see it in that way and deepen our devotional service with every situation that comes in our life, whether it be a success or failure, victory or defeat, happiness or distress, pleasure or pain, health or disease. They are all opportunities to deepen our devotion. But you have to be sincere and humble with nice association to support you. And then you can never be defeated spiritually. So yes, as you become stronger, greater tests will come. But that's what you need. It's just like, for instance, if you're in the first standard and you have an exam, what do they ask you? The first question may be 2 + 2 = and this is hard for someone in the first standard. 4. It's a difficult thing to. Now, if someone in the first standard sees the test that someone gets before he gets his doctorate in mathematics from Harvard University, he'll think, my God, how am I ever going to pass this test? I can't do it. But you won't be given that test until you're advanced enough and prepared enough that it's a challenge for you. That challenge is necessary to cause you to seriously understand the necessity to assimilate the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in your life. It's necessary. We need challenges. It forces us to go deeper into our own surrender. And Krishna will give you just the perfect challenge, just the perfect test, according to where you're at. The test for the person in first standard is no more difficult for him than the test for the graduate student, because he's prepared. Krishna will not give you a test unless you're prepared to pass it. He'll never give any devotee a test unless he's given them the proper preparation to pass it. But whether you're in first standard or whether you're in your PhD classes, you have to work. You have to utilize your independence to do everything you can. And that's what will empower Krishna to help you pass the test. But if you're lazy and faithless, then whether you're in first standard or PhD, you're going to fail. You're going to be defeated. So yes, on this battlefield at the beginning, Krishna sends little soldiers of Maya. But we're little. But if we just keep the words of our guru at heart and remain faithful, we will be victorious. But as we become more advanced in Krishna consciousness, it's not helpful. For you don't ask a master degree mathematician what is 2 + 2. It's useless. You have to ask him something more difficult. So Krishna will ask more difficult things of you when you make advancement, because that's what you require to bring you up further and further and further. And as we have said, ultimately you have to come face to face with your own ahankar or ego. That's the final battle. Throughout the war, little aspects of your ego are always coming to get you. One of your godbrothers criticizes you. It's not your godbrother that's an enemy, but it's the ego that springs up in your heart when you hear that. That is your enemy. Don't try to defeat your godbrother or godsister. Try to defeat your own ego. Or when you have the feeling of criticizing another because you don't like something about certain attribute that they have. It's not that attribute of that person that's your enemy. It's your egoistic tendency to criticize that's your enemy. Are you willing to fight against it? If you are, you make spiritual advancement. If you're not, you go down. So these are the little battles of the ego we have now. But at a certain point, you know, the ego is going to come. Just like when Parasaram was fighting Kartavirya Arjuna, first he was sending his sons. First he sent his soldiers, then he sent his sons. And when Parasaram defeated all of them, he came out himself. Ravana did the same thing. He was the last to come out in the battlefield. First he sent his foot soldiers, they were defeated. Then he was sending his generals, they were defeated. Then he was sending his own sons, and they were defeated. When everything else was defeated, he came out himself with his 10 heads and 20 arms. And only Ram could kill him. So similarly, within our life, the false ego, Maya, through our false ego, is sending, through our mind, is sending so many little soldiers at the beginning. But when we take shelter of the Lord, ultimately, that desire, that naked desire, that I am the enjoyer, has to be killed. Killed through purification. And there's only one way to do it. The same way we advance in every stage of our spiritual life. We have to take shelter of the Lord. We have to take shelter of Krishna's name with sincerity and faith, with the help of the devotees. So it's not very difficult. And if you just continue in a humble mood to serve, then yes, 100% you will go back home, back to Godhood. Krishna will save you. No doubt. Does that answer your question? Srila Prabhupada ki.